Good morning. It's the 28th of November. We continue with the exhortation from Brother Harry Tennant. I shall miss a few paragraphs out in order to comply with the 5-minute requirement. I read. Esther had always been obedient to Mordecai, and she now rose to the challenge. Mordecai and his fellow Jews were to join Esther and her maidens for a 3-day fast, after which Esther would go uninvited to the king. Perhaps she prayed that she might be called of him without her having to risk her life. Be that as it may, she was resolved in her mind that she would go to the outer court, and, if I perish, I perish. She was willing to be faithful unto death. As she stood in the outer court, the king lifted his eyes. He could have been anywhere in Susa or his empire, but that day he was on his throne. He extended his golden sceptre to Esther, and, touching the top, she must have praised and thanked her God. Slowly the net was closing on Haman, and he did not yet know it. He was in greater favour than ever, and more was to come, because he had been invited with the king to the queen's banquet. Esther bided her time. Another banquet the following night was all she asked, although the king had offered her anything up to the half of his kingdom. Haman walked on air, or rode jauntily home, to tell his wife all about the honour bestowed on him. He celebrated in his exuberance, but told his wife that despite all this happiness, he found the very sight of Mordecai as gall to his stomach. Haman was persuaded, though he required little of that, to erect gallows for Mordecai, gallows 75 feet high. He was to ask the king next day whether he might be rid of Mordecai. The angel must have been delighted to visit the king in secret and disturb his sleep. Victory by insomnia. The king asked for a book of records, and there was handed to him, again doubtless by the angel's urging, that very section in which Mordecai's name was favourably mentioned, because he had passed information about the treachery of two of the king's chamberlains. Mordecai's warning proved to be the king's deliverance, but the king had not rewarded the faithful Jew. He would do so now. Haman was already in the outer court early in the morning, a diligent worker, and he was summoned by the king. His ego imagined that the question the king asked him was about his own honour, and therefore he lavished honour on himself in his imagination. But, alas for him, the recipient was to be none other than Mordecai, and he was designated to ensure that everything in his answer to the king was to be given to Mordecai. Imagine the scene when Mordecai's sackcloth was covered by the royal apparel, the regal robe, and he was lifted onto the royal horse and taken through the city to the cry, bow the knee to my enemy, the one who refused to honour me. Haman knew in his heart, and his wife and friends reinforced his fears, that his doom was now sealed, and that night, after the banquet, he was hurried to the 75-foot gallows and strung up. So it was that the Jews were able to countermand the edict of Haman that had been sealed with the king's seal, and fight for themselves to great effect, being doubtless strengthened by the hand of the Lord. Annually, the Jews were to remember Purim, as they do to this day, first Passover and then Purim. Mordecai, who had been humiliated by Haman, was now in royal favour. So it can be for us. The man who rose from his signet-sealed tomb will exalt us if, in this our age, we remember him week by week, and continue to be a separate people for him in hope of the great day when the edict of death will be overpowered. May that day come soon. Thank you for listening.